I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to Minute 51 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, and hopefully all week, unless I get a little annoyed with him, is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show. Welcome back this season, Alan.
Hey, it's so good to be back, and not an ominous opening at all.
Oh, come on. You know that I'm just teasing.
I know. No, you know what? You and I are such good friends, and we met via this this experiment of being able to break down movies one episode at a time, and it has gone so far beyond that. So it's almost like I look forward to our daily conversations about things other than movies much as I do down with you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same way. It's that's the way it works. That's good. You know, you are considered one of my good friends that I've never met.
Yeah. Well, not in person.
In person. That's right. All right. So minute 51 begins with George and Mary finally figuring things out and ends with Mrs. Bailey telling it like it is. So first of all, I mean, you know that I like going in order of what's going on in the minute, but I did choose this week specifically for you, Alan, because of something that happens in today's episode, because I know that you have some, you have some personal knowledge about things that are going on, you know, in this particular scene. So maybe you'll be able to give us a little bit of insight into things later today and tomorrow. I don't know.
Okay. I think I know where you're going with it, but I'm going to wait for you to actually open that door all the way.
Have you watched the movie? Do you know what minute we're talking about?
Yes. I do. I believe we're about to experience one of the great joys in couplehood.
That is
at least the start of this episode.
That is correct. There you go. All right. So
And are you intimating that I might have had maybe 2.5 months ago a similar actual experience in my own life? Not me personally, but my daughter.
That is correct. That is what I'm not insinuating. I was, you know, I'm saying it right out there. You know, I don't beat around the bush. There you go. That's.
You know, one of the things, and the audience may be getting to know us more because we've done so many episodes together, but you know me, and I was on the edge of my stress envelope getting ready for that wedding.
That's right. But I think that has partially to do with the people who the people around you who were more stressed than you, that they were making you feel stressed. I think that's what it comes down to.
There's a combination of that. Yes. Yeah. But it's still it's the weirdest thing. Much like this week, we can tease the whole week how it starts at one emotional level and goes to the other. My daughter's wedding is the opposite of the flow of what we'll talk about this week. Leading up to and almost even to the day before, I was on the edge of saying, why are we doing this? This is not even worth it. Let's just cancel it. Let's just, we're done. I was ready to just throw in the towel. And it could not, on the flip side, talk about a reverse, could not have been a more perfect day, a more perfect ceremony. And people are still reaching out and telling us how, of all the weddings they've been to, is one of their most enjoyable that they can remember. So much like this week, but in reverse, it started off at one emotional level and went in the other direction.
Okay. That's good. It's the opposite of what's going on here. So there you go. I'm glad you can relate.
Yes, somewhat. Very much so.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, at the beginning of this minute, we get about 10 or 15 seconds, which is basically just the end of what we were talking about last week. You know, George and Mary were on the phone with Sam, who anyone who's paying attention, I only realized this when I was watching this minute by minute, you know, Sam has other things on his mind. Sam is not really interested in Mary because he's, you know, playing games with the woman behind him the whole time. So as much as everyone seems to think that Sam is calling because he's interested in Mary, I still haven't figured out why Sam actually called Mary. You know, it doesn't make any sense unless he was trying to get her to invest. I think that was about it. You know, invest in plastics. That's it. You know, I don't know. So basically the first 15 seconds here is George and Mary embracing, finally realizing both of them how much they want and need one another to in life. And she says, George, George, George. And he goes, oh, Mary. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, Mary. That's pretty much the dialogue of these 15 seconds. Now, obviously, if someone is not watching this as it's happening, they could completely misconstrue everything I just read, but that's fine. You should be watching the movie and paying attention to the way that the two of them are saying these things. You know, and at a certain point, George like kisses her all over her face. And, you know, while this is happening,
I was gonna actually ask you, did it, I know it's a different time. And of course the framing is designed for more of a boxy, theater screen. They hadn't really gotten the CinemaScope, the ultra wide screen. We didn't get the Panavision yet, but because they're so close to on top of one another, it almost felt a little uncomfortable for me watching it, because it's like, you know, usually when people are making out, today's movies, they're so pulled back usually, unless they're going to get real super intimate. And then obviously this is a tame movie compared by today's standards. But I was like, okay, George, you're almost like a puppy licking all over her face. Like, he can't get enough real estate kissing her all over.
Yeah, but I think that's part of the whole idea, that he's finally realized what it is that he wants. He wants Mary. I mean, we've talked so many times, and we'll probably talk about in the future, how clueless George is in this whole movie when it comes to love and relationships. But when it comes to business, his mind works amazing wonders the entire time. But when it comes to relationships, he's clueless. He doesn't know what's going on. So the fact that at this point we see that it's finally hit him, and then he goes and, you know, constantly kisses her, and he's kissing her in somewhat forceful ways, but this is his way of trying to show her, okay, I love you, and you are the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. So from that perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. No, I get it. It just, it's because there's like so on top of one another, and because it fills the frame, literally face to face, we might as well be in there getting kissed too.
Right. Right. I understand that. It's very, yeah, you're right. It seems a little too intimate for us to be watching it.
I don't want to jump necessarily, but the wipe.
Well, before we get to the wipe, one second, I don't want to get to the wipe yet, because did you notice her mother? You know, Mrs. Yeah. Hatch is standing there at the top of the, you know, top of the stairs. Last week she was listening in, she was eavesdropping on the conversation. And now, mm-hmm. you know, she's sort of, I guess, upset that she's been eavesdropping, because she now sees the two of them making out, and, you know, puts her hand above her mouth, somewhat in disgust, I guess you can say, that this is what's happening downstairs. But instead of trying to stop it, she just runs away.
Yeah. Once again, the mores of the day, it was a little odd. I would say she doesn't look happy.
Correct. I mean, we just heard last week that Mary said to her, you know, he's making mad passionate love to me, you know, which we discussed last week, that doesn't mean what we think it means now. You know, it meant something else back then. But, you know, she might not agree with it, but she also doesn't do anything to try and stop it. She just has this appalled look on her face.
Right. And I think when I say the mores of the day, we have to remember this is the time where generally you don't have a man and a woman, even if they're courting, left completely alone in the house.
Correct.
You usually have somebody close by.
Right. I mean, you're talking about because of the, you know, the code, or you're talking about in a movie, yeah, or you're talking about in general?
No. In general, the mores of the day, you know, you didn't want to be, well, I think human nature being what it is, I don't think that's ever changed. But I think
no.
the idea of being the sense of impropriety. You don't want to be caught in a situation that could reflect badly on you. And so, like, generally, and unfortunately, very, very much on the male side, that was less the problem than it was the female side of the day. You wouldn't want anyone to be able to say anything that might be construed as negative against the virtuousness of the female, right, of the woman.
Correct. I mean, I can even bring a personal example. And probably about 25 years ago, I was set up on a blind date with somebody, and she's like, "Okay, well, you know, we'll go out, but I don't go out, you know, to restaurants or anything like that. What I'll do is you know, meet me at my parents' house, and we'll sit and talk in the living room." And that's what we did. It was really, really strange because, you know, I got to the house, you know, walk by the kitchen, her parents and brother are sitting there, you know, knowing that there's this guy coming for this blind date, you know, and then the two of us, you know, sat in the living room talking for an hour, 2 hours, whatever it was. I mean, we didn't have very much in common, but it was a very strange experience, that type of thing. But it goes along with this type of thing that you need to have some sort of chaperone around just in the next room to make sure that nothing happens that shouldn't happen. Let's put it that way.
Right. Right.
But whatever. Right. Okay. So now you can talk about the wipe that you wanted to talk about. So wipe really away, weird. Alan.
This is really weird because, you know, we've got this moment of obviously intimate joy, right? But the choice of Capra to wipe on this woman's face, who almost looks a little psychotic. She's got this wide-eyed stare and she's like, ah!
That's right.
Well, is that a commentary to have that face literally coming in between the two of them, looking like the town crier going, "Hey guys!"
Right. Well, I mean, this is Cousin Tilly. They finally had to give her something to do. You know, she doesn't have very much to do in the movie.
Of all the possible takes you could have had. It felt really, now maybe when you're watching it real time, you don't think a whole lot about it, but because I'm slowing it down, I'm like, wait a minute. That's kind of a, I don't want to say psycho, but it's not, it seems a little wide-eyed and crazy looking when she's delivering this line.
Yes, I agree. She starts screaming, "Here they come, here they come." You know, and then we hear the music in the background from the wedding march, which, mm-hmm, which is very strange. Okay, again, we talked about the fact that you've recently gone through this, but, you know, they're playing the wedding march as they're about to leave after the wedding.
Right. You know what? And I think Capra does a great job with this because we're not in a church, obviously. There's no organ playing, but it's almost as if the ceremony just ended, as if they had it upstairs rather than them coming home to put on their clothes to change into their travel outfits, which, right, is what most bride and grooms do. But because I think he wants to make sure that audience understands they've just gotten married, I think playing that in the background does work, even though it wouldn't in any reality be being played in this couple's living room, right?
Right. Correct. No, but I'm sorry. Also the fact that, you know, okay, what do you know about the wedding march song?
Oh, I don't know much about it beyond the fact that
it's played at
the wedding march. That's about all.
Do you know who composed it?
Oh, you know what? I know the name. But it's going to, you know what, rather than leave 30 seconds of dead air while my brain tries to figure it out, I'll let you tell me.
Felix Mendelssohn.
Mendelssohn, yes.
That's right. It was written in 1842, and it is one of the best pieces that he ever did. Another one that he did was, he also has a song from A Midsummer Night's Dream from Shakespeare's play, which is also very...
Symphony number 3.
That's right, which is very well known. But obviously, this is probably more well known. Mm-hmm. It's usually,
yeah, I would say everyone knows it, even if they don't know who wrote it.
That's right. You know, and I mean, it does not have any lyrics to it. Okay, or it doesn't have official lyrics to it. Let's put it that way. Now, I mean, you did a few years ago, The Best Years of Our Lives, and the very final part of that movie actually has the kids being taught by Hoagy Carmichael the actual words that they should be singing, you know, so they do sing some lyrics there. So I found a number of different types of lyrics for the song, So one of them is faithfully guarded, remain behind, where the blessing of love shall preserve you. Triumphant courage, love and happiness join you in faith as the happiest of couples, champion of youths, remain here. Okay, then there's another one that's, okay, here comes the bride, all dressed in light, radiant and lovely.
That's the one.
That's right. Radiant and lovely, she shines in his sight. Gently she glides gracefully as a dove, meeting her bridegroom, her eyes full of love. Love have they waited, long have they planned. Life goes before them, opening her hand, asking God's blessing as they begin. Life with new meeting, life shared as one, entering God's union, bowed before his throne, promise each other to have and to hold. Okay, then there's also a parody. Here comes the bride, all fat and wide. See how she wobbles from side to side. Here comes the groom, thin as a broom. And here comes the usher, the old toilet flusher.
Oh, that's the an homage to Jack Sprat could eat no fat as
well as
could eat no lean.
That's
so
right.
You see in them both.
They
lick the platter clean. Here comes the bride, all fat and wide. That's funny.
Yes.
You know what's so funny? When you said the first line, though, of the one that I traditionally heard when I was a kid, and so I've never looked up the lyrics, I always thought it's Here Comes the Bride, all dressed in white.
So did I. I always thought that, too.
I never thought of it as light.
But I never thought of the next line. Here comes the bride, all dressed in white. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's how, you know, that's how much of a
stick. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you don't think of the words. I never thought about the fact of radiant and lovely she shines in his sight.
You know, I think...
I'm trying to remember if those are the words in The Best Years of Our Lives.
You know, I'm wondering this, though, because from watching cartoons, because they would do this in a lot, they would have something happen where they would play the wedding march song and you would just hear like Foghorn Leghorn or somebody just say that first line. And maybe that's as kids, we only knew the first line because we learned it from the cartoons.
Ah, that could be. That actually, that makes a lot of sense.
I never
actually
realized there were additional lyrics. I just thought that first line.
That's true. No, but you've heard the rest of the music. So you must assume, you know, or it was just da, 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 da. I don't know.
As a kid, I never thought much about it beyond that first line.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
And I've never bothered to look it up. In fact, so thank you. So I am this many years old. I realized that there are actual other lyrics and actual other versions of lyrics to this song.
Okay. Now, in The Best Years of Our Lives, they actually have different lyrics. There you go. It's Here Comes the Bride, all dressed in white, sweetly serene in the soft glowing light. Lovely to see, marching to thee, sweet love united for eternity. Interesting. Okay. The truth is, I think that was the best of the four I just mentioned. That was probably the best.
A little more updated for the language, I'd say.
Yeah, that's true. It's pretty interesting the way that they do this here. So the two of them, you know, then we see George and Mary walk down the stairs, followed by I'm pretty sure that's Mary's mother. You know, she looks a little different because she's not in her robe. And I'm pretty sure that's her mother. And, you know, people start throwing all these things at them. Did you notice what they're throwing at them?
Well, traditionally, my eyes fill in rice.
Correct.
And they're pelting. Right.
They are definitely pelting.
I mean, from a production perspective, I mean, Frank Capra spared no expense on the rice throwing.
Now, do you know why people throw rice at a bride and groom as they are coming, as they are leaving, you know, the ceremony, I guess you can say?
Well, I do know we don't do it anymore because it can hurt the bird.
Is that really the reason?
Yeah, I thought something about that. If birds eat it, it can swell in their stomachs and they don't have a way of expelling gas, something like that. It's just not safe for birds. So I forgot what, you know, like my daughter, actually, when she got married, they had, instead of doing anything, they gave everybody sparklers and they ran out while everybody was holding sparklers.
They weren't throwing sparklers at people, though.
No, they weren't throwing them. No, they're just
let's light the bride's dress on fire. Let's throw sparklers at her.
But doesn't the whole idea of throwing rice, isn't it like supposed to be like a sign of good wishes or, you know, good luck or, you know, a happy start to your life?
Basically,
together?
It started in Hindu weddings where rice denotes fertility, prosperity, and purity, and they used to throw it into like a fire. And when Western weddings started using it, they decided to just throw the rice at the people. You know, I don't really know how that, you know, here it's like, we're going to wish them well by throwing stuff in a fire. And instead we'll just, you know, pelt the bride and groom with it instead. You know, let's see who can, who can hurt the bride and the groom quicker by throwing rice on them. I don't know. There are some places that have different rice type of dishes that they use different like sweet flavoring around it also to make like the idea that, you know, if rice is this you know, if it denotes fertility, prosperity, and purity, so therefore, you know, if you make it sweet, so that it's something that you know, it should be easy for the bride and groom. There are places in Japan and the Philippines that use rice wine for the same reason. And
nothing wrong with a glass of sake.
There you go. So, I mean, the exit from the wedding ceremony, which is known as the send-off, and that's where, you know, people will, you know, there are different places where people will bow, or there are different traditions where you're supposed to kiss the knees of, like, the elders of the community as they get the send-off and stuff like that. But then you have the whole idea of throwing rice. Sometimes it's, people throw other types of seeds also.
Yeah, bird seed. That's the thing I was trying to think of that besides because they don't do rice anymore, but literally because it looks similar in pictures. I've been at many weddings where we threw bird seed.
Because you think that the bride and groom are...
Once again, if the birds eat it, it's actually okay for them.
There are also customs where people throw shoes at the bride and groom. So, I don't know. You know, you go from rice and bird seed to shoes. So, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how that's wishing. It was like, get out of here.
It's run fast. Get out of here quick.
Get out. But isn't in some Middle Eastern cultures, one of the worst things you can do to show your displeasure is slap your shoe on someone's picture or poster? Like the idea that you're the shoe as a means of like, I'm trampling you beneath my feet.
It's possible. I don't know. Not in my Middle East Coast culture.
I don't think of Israel as like, I know that's where you're located, but I don't think of you in the same way that I think of as, let's say, our
that's
Islamic.
No, it's the, in Jewish culture, that's not an issue. You know, let's put it that way. That's what I can tell you. I couldn't tell you beyond that. Yeah.
I just remember, like, there was something, like, remember with the fall of Saddam Hussein, that the people protesting that were happy that he was gone were taking their sandals off and taking turns smacking the bottoms of their shoes onto his face.
Okay, it makes sense.
I just remember seeing videos.
It definitely makes sense. You know, yeah. But yeah.
So I've never. That's why I guess that popped in my head when you said some cultures think of it as a, hey, you guys got married, throw a shoe at you. I'm like, well, the cultures I know that throw shoes, it's right. Not a good thing.
That's right. How many people do you think approximately get married every year in the U.S.?
Ooh. Well, you know, since half of them will get
divorced. We're not talking about the divorce. We're talking about marriage. It doesn't say here whether it's a first, second, third, or fifth, or 16th marriage. Yeah. You know.
Let's see. Well, there's 330 million people in the United States. A lot of them are already married. I'm going to go with 4 or 5 million.
Only 2 million people get married every year.
That seems...
It does. But how many people? Well, I think nowadays there are a lot of people who just don't get married. I think that's what it comes down to also. You know, a lot of times for economic reasons or whatever it is. But
if you never get married, you don't have to worry about that divorce.
That's awesome. Very true. That's a financial reason. Yes. how many people do you think approximately attend weddings in the U.S. a year?
Ooh, well, it's got to be more than would you say about 2 million?
Yeah, so it's more than 2 million. I'll tell you that.
Got to be, because there's usually more than about, we'll say if there's average of 30 or 40 at a wedding. So maybe we'll say 50 million?
70 million people. Approximately 70 million people. And what is the average amount that people spend on the gift?
$250.
$100.
Ooh, cheap.
Apparently.
Well, I guess
I said the average.
I guess in today's age, like I'm only going to spend 100 because I know in about 6 months you're going to go on to somebody else and I'll have to spend another
100. There you go. Okay, that makes sense.
I'm not bitter.
Yes.
Well, I can tell you, we have exceeded that average. I actually thought it was a little higher, so I kind of went with my gut. It was about 250. I would have thought it was a nice, you know, when you're trying to buy somebody maybe a plate setting for their china, although apparently that's not a thing anymore. I found that out. You know, nobody wants china patterns anymore. Nobody cares about the inheritance of china and other family heirlooms. A lot of the younger generation, they don't even think that way.
Because they don't want to have fancy meals at their house, or because they're just going to use plastic? No.
I don't know. It's the strange thing. I was like, so what's your pattern? Like, pattern? We're not doing it. We're not doing that. I'm like, we want things like, you know, Cuisinarts and stereos and GPS finders and camping gear. I'm like, okay, so you want Christmas presents. Okay, cool.
Right. Okay. If that's what they want, why not?
Well, and you know what? I don't mean to sound I have, when I was a lot younger, I had stronger opinions on certain things. But then when I look at this, whatever you want, it's your wedding. You know,
right.
If that's what you want, if that's what's going to make you happy, have at it. Don't do something to make somebody else happy, because this is supposed to be your day. And I can tell you, being the father of the first time ever, I had that attitude through the whole thing. I was like, you just tell me what you want me to do. I literally did not weigh in, which is so weird for me. It was really hard. I did not weigh in at all unless my daughter said, well, what do you think? In which case I'm like, well, here's what I'm going to tell you what I think, but it's ultimately your choice.
There are a total of 11 different types of people that are part of the wedding party. So can you name them? And what are they each
do? Well, they could have more than that, because my daughter, because
I said 11 types of people, types of people.
Okay. Types. Well, the maid or maiden of honor.
Okay.
The best man. You have the groomsmen and the bridesmaids. I don't know if this is what you mean by types. You've got the ring bearer and you've got the flower girl.
Okay. What's the ring bearer usually referred to? The ring bearer usually has a different name.
Well, normally it's the ring bearer and the flower
girl. No, you have the flower girls. Usually the ring bearer is one of the pages. You have a whole bunch of, like, the you know, flower girls are the little girls, and then you have the little boys are known as pages, and one of them is usually considered the ring bearer.
Okay, I never thought of them as pages, okay. But I never heard that term, actually. But let's see. Now, you're not talking about things like then mother of the bride, father of the bride, and stuff like that. No, does that count?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so mother of the bride, mother of the groom, father of the groom. And then this is the preacher. It's nice to have somebody maybe officiate.
That's right, an officiant. Okay.
And I will tell you, if you don't have one, consider getting one if you're going to get married, a wedding coordinator.
Okay, that's actually not on this list because it's not part of the wedding party. That's something else. But you missed two very important people in the wedding party.
Oh, the bride and groom?
Yes.
Well, I just thought that kind of went without saying.
Well, okay, I asked for 11, so, you know, yes. So very good. See, you get top marks for that, Alan. You apparently, you sound as if you're somebody who's just recently dealt with something like this, so.
Yes, we may have mentioned that once or twice already. I have.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know. We've mentioned that? Yeah.
Tell you what, I thought college was expensive. At least I was stretched that out over 4 years. This was across one night.
Yeah, that's right. And
do you have the average cost of, if you look that up? Because I have no idea, but I can, I got to imagine that it's even more than what we spent, and I spent way more than I thought I'd ever spent.
Well, I got to say, the problem with looking up the cost is the fact that there are so many different types of weddings. You know, with different number of people and stuff like that. I mean, I'm just going to quickly go through the list of different types of weddings that I found here. I'm not going to go into detail as all what they all are. Okay, you have what's known as a white wedding, a civil wedding, a destination wedding, a double wedding, an elopement, a hand fasting, a mass wedding, a micro wedding, a military wedding, a peasant wedding, a shotgun wedding, a vow renewal wedding, and a weekend wedding.
Okay. I'm pretty sure my daughters would be considered a white wedding, traditional white wedding with the gathering, the church service followed by a meal the day before. We had the rehearsal dinner, So we had a rehearsal dinner. We had the rehearsal. Then the next day, the wedding with pictures and everything. And then the bride and the groom and the ceremony. And then afterwards, a sit-down dinner with dancing and partying after.
Correct. Do you know why people wear white at a wedding?
Well,
not just because of the purity. Not just because of the purity issues. I'm talking about, do you know where who the first person was who got married wearing white? And everyone said, oh, that's a great idea. And they started doing that.
Oh, see, now you're taxing my trivia brain would want to go, it has to be somebody in royalty, but I can't, I don't know.
You're definitely in the right ballpark. So it was Queen Victoria. When she got married, she had a white gown, and people started copying her idea. You know, because the idea of white, it symbolizes both extravagance and virginal purity, and that's why it started becoming the idea for, okay, this is the color that people are going to wear at weddings, which is now why it's called a white wedding, that idea. So yeah, that I thought that was very interesting. So again, I don't know the average price of a wedding, because it all depends on, you know, where you're doing it. It depends on the venue, depends on the number of people. There's so many different elements that you put all together in order to try to find the sum of what it costs to make a wedding, that it's a little difficult to find an average for. You can find an average for each one of these different types of weddings, but I didn't do the research on that. I don't know how much a shotgun wedding costs. Maybe it depends on how much the bullets cost.
That's a little bit cheaper. And a lot faster.
Yes.
like do it now.
That is correct.
I would guess it's probably anywhere between 30,000 and 50,000. I would not be surprised if the average white wedding, if you just look at the traditional wedding based on venue cost, the average size, I'm sure the people will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, and some may spend maybe 5 or 10,000, but I would guess between 30,000 and 50,000.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
That would be my educated guess.
There you go. Right. And I mean, the most of the rest of the dialogue in this minute is just people saying goodbye. And did you notice all of the various characters from the movie that we can see in this wedding scene?
It's like the whole town's here.
Well, I actually only counted 7. There's only 7 people that are there, and it's very interesting the people that are missing, from the whole thing. So first of all, we can see Mr. Gower. We see Violet. Okay, which is interesting that they invited Violet to the wedding, but okay. Then we see cousins Tilly and cousin Eustace. We see both mothers, Ma Bailey and Mrs. Hatch, and we see Annie, the housekeeper of the Baileys. But there's a lot of people that are missing.
His uncle's not there. Where's his uncle?
Billy's not there. Harry's not there, along with his wife Ruth. Okay, Sam Wainwright's not there, if he's such a good friend. How about Marty? Mary's brother? He seems to be missing from the wedding also.
Well, it was raining. Maybe they didn't want to get their hair wet.
Yeah. Obviously, we'll talk about this later in the week, but Ernie and Bert are both missing also.
Bert and Ernie? Yes. Okay, cool. I like them. They were my favorite characters on Sesame Street. Did you notice, though, because remember how we started off talking about they're leaving their house, but it's almost like they're leaving the wedding venue, which is a little weird. Yeah. They must have had the wedding somewhere. So maybe these are the only people who could make it back to the house for the send-off.
So the brothers couldn't be there for the send-off? That's first of all. And second of all, this doesn't look like a house. When they come on the inside, it looks like a house. When they go outside, it no longer looks as if it's part of a house. Because the porch is much larger than you would expect.
Well, maybe this was their wedding venue then, but it looked like your typical antebellum style wraparound porch with some columns on the front and the front wide steps there going into the house. The thing is, when you got a box framing like this, it's so hard to get scale. It really is, because I think as the car pulls away, I can't tell if that's a second house or if that's a wraparound, like if the porch is continuing in a different direction.
Right.
And there's obviously a white picket fence. I mean, it's It could be it could be that it's somebody's plantation style house that is used as a wedding venue, and that's where they're leaving their reception.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's no way of us really knowing this whole thing. And I love the transition when they walk out from the porch, then instead of them being showered with rice, they're being showered with rain. Which, mm-hmm. you know, in this movie, every time it rains, it just does not look real anyway. You know, it looks as if they're under sprinklers with the way that this rain is coming down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that everybody's, you know, everyone's standing there with umbrellas, except for Eustace, who somehow is trying to get the camera. He's trying to take a picture in this downpour.
Yeah. You know, of course, you don't know it the first time you're watching it, but the first, you know, rewatching it, getting ready for this minute, I was like, you know, why would the director, and maybe, you know, the story calls for it, but why would the director intentionally shoot a happy scene in what is normally when you have black umbrellas and rain, it's because you're shooting a funeral. You're talking about the death of somebody. Visually and storytelling wise, you know, having a bunch of people all dressed up in nice clothing, but with umbrellas and it raining, you immediately jump to funeral. It gives you the sense of like the world is sad. And here's this happy day. Normally we would have a shot where it's, you know, the blue sky, sun is out, birds are chirping, but it's not. And I think that's intentional. It feels like it should be a little jarring. Like even the first time watching, you're like, oh, it's sad that it's raining on their wedding. But wait, it's a movie. You can control this. So why did it rain on their wedding day? And I think that's important to think about.
Do you think one of the reasons that they did that is to throw us off? Because, you know, this is a guy who eventually is no longer going to be there.
Well, I personally think it's foreboding. I think it does create that. And I think when you watch it, at least, you know, it's hard for me to go back to the very first time I ever saw it. And I didn't see this movie until I was a lot older. I was probably in my early 30s the first time I ever saw this movie. I somehow never got around to watching it during the holidays. And when I finally watched it, I remember initially thinking, okay, this is too sappy, too old style. I mean, when does the bad stuff happen? Because I'm used to having a movie that has something of substance to make us learn and grow and whatever. And obviously we get it with this movie. But I do know when I rewatched it for you, my first thought was, oh, that's right. It's raining on their wedding. That's sort of a bad omen.
Again, maybe it's just trying to throw us off. I think that's partially what it is. Because, again, it's a happy day for George, but this is, you know, this is not George's wish. George's wish was something completely different. So from some perspective, you can say, okay, George is in a sad situation because, you know, he's not getting what he wants. He wants to travel the world, but instead he's being stuck here. So maybe that's the ominous aspect of it.
Well, I think, and yet I'm sure there could be, we could argue and discuss multiple layers, but I feel like from a filmmaker's storytelling palette as a visual medium, it's letting the audience know it's sort of that just a little bit of the foreboding that, hey, things are not about to go really well. And even if you're not sure why it looks weird, I think because the rest of this week, we're going to watch everything just tumble out of control. And we're starting the happiest day of this couple's lives with a downpour, and I think that foreshadows the next elements of the movie coming. And I like that because if you're not actively thinking about it, you probably never thought. You're like, well, sad, it rained on their wedding, but look, they're so happy, they're throwing rice and everyone's cheering and just married. But I think from a visual medium, a storytelling, it's interesting that the director has it on a rainy day where we normally think of that as a funeral, where we normally think of somebody not being with us anymore, which is, of course, a huge element of this movie.
Right. Okay. I think that's very true. Now, did you notice that Mary throws the bouquet, and did you notice who catches it?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Okay. So Violet catches it. Yeah. Which is, you know, Violet is the one who's always been after George.
Right.
And
you know what? I didn't.
And I saw this on backwards. Okay, if you go back, okay, she at second 20, she throws the bouquet, and we see Violet jump up, and catch it.
That's just as she's coming upstairs, so she catches it. Violet has her back to us when she catches. Okay, I see it now.
That's right. Oh, and good. Apparently, good. This is the only scene in the movie, I saw this on IMDb, that that Violet is without some sort of hat. This is the only time we actually see her hair. Every single other time she has some sort of hat on her head, which I don't know what that means, but I found it an interesting thing that IMDb pointed out. And then they're rushed into the car by Ernie, basically, in order to make sure that they don't get too wet. The good friend / cab driver who doesn't show up at the wedding but is there to take them into the car. And we hear,
well, he might have been at the wedding, he just went to go get the car because he knew they were upstairs changing. He's like, okay, while you're changing, I'll go get the car.
Okay, all right, I'll buy that. And then
for a dollar.
That's right. Then we get a shot of RoboCop.
Well done. We had to do that. Every episode, we should have a mission of dropping one-liners from other movies to see how many people that are listening catch the one-liner allusions to other movies.
I do that even without having to try, so that's fine.
Me too.
So basically, then we have a shot of Ma Bailey and Annie, watching them as they go. And then Ma Bailey goes, first Harry, now George. And then she says, Annie, we're just two old maids now. Now, what I find really funny, first of all, is that, Ma Bailey wasn't at Harry's wedding. She wasn't even invited to Harry's wedding. So it's like, okay, Harry got married and didn't have me at the wedding. She should at least, be happy that she was invited to this wedding. Then the question remains, and we'll never know the answer to this, is how long after Harry's wedding, because the beginning of this minute basically is the same day that Harry and Ruth announced to everybody that they got married. So, how long afterwards are George and Mary tying the knot? We'll never know, because it's not something that's ever mentioned, how long the jump is. So it could be a few months, it could be a year, it could be 2 years. It depends on how long they actually wanted to continue, courting before finally getting married. My assumption is probably within a few months, if that.
Yeah. The way that the movie is even edited through, it makes you feel like these events are happening kind of very quickly, even if there's time that has literally happened. You don't get a sense of a drag anywhere.
Right. And so therefore, if this is 1932, 1933. So that means George is about 25, 26. That's about that's his age at this point. So the actress who plays his mother, Beulah Bondi, was born in 1889. So when this movie was made, basically, so therefore she was probably about 55, give or take. So
that seems about right.
Right. It sounds about right. But again, this is supposedly, let's say, 12 years beforehand. So maybe she's even only in her, theoretically, in her mid-40s, as opposed to her mid-50s.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would also make sense that she was probably, relatively young when she had George. So if George is 25, 26, so it makes sense that she's maybe supposed to be 45, 46 at this point, even though, as someone who is a 50-year-old, I look younger than she does, but
I was going to go right to that point. My wife and I do this all the time. We actually had some when my father-in-law passed away. We had a lot of his home videos changed over to video or digital, so we could go through and look at a lot of the old, 8mm home movies. And there was one scene, and I paused it. I'm like, babe, look at all the women in this scene. How old do you think they were when this was shot? And she had to mentally kind of calculate. She goes, they're probably all in their mid-40s. I'm like, don't they all look like what we think of today as people in their 70s?
That's right.
And I think it's interesting when you look back how people either in our current age, because of maybe we know more about health and getting checkups and maybe not being in the sun all day and whatever, we don't look as old, even though we're the exact same age you would see people from 50 to 100 years ago.
That's right.
In general, we don't look as old comparatively.
Right. Yeah. It's scary because it doesn't, you don't feel the number, but you look at the people, you know, who were at that number at a certain time, and they'd look so much older than than we think, you know. So
yeah.
And as the car drives away, the minute ends, you know, but we get this last little, you know, ditty by Ma Bailey, who basically says, we're just two old maids now, and we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out if there's any type of response to that type of comment. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Alan?
No, I think it's and I'm happy you picked me for this week because of where we're going and because of not only my own personal reaction to having had a wedding, one of my daughters being the father of the bride. I like it because I remember, like I told you just a few minutes ago, the very first time I finally saw it, I thought it was just too sappy, it just wasn't my cup of tea for the first, you know, third of the movie here. I'm like, when does something happen that's interesting? And I love it because when you look at it and break it down, and I already talked about, you know, the foreboding of the rain, this to me is that moment where everything should be going up. Everything should be happy. Everything should be great. These people, we've watched them making out. We watch them getting married. Everyone's cheering. And yet it's pouring. And that just, that's a great visual indicator of where we're going.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. All right. Excellent. So every Monday we have a segment called Capra Monday, where my guests will give their top five Frank Capra movies. So Alan, once you started, you're number five and work your way up.
All right. Number five. And I'll be honest, I didn't realize looking at the body of work, how many Capra movies I haven't seen. So I'm probably going to have a homework assignment at some point to go see some of these other movies. But for me, the ones I have seen, number five, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. Number four is the very movie we're talking about. For me, It's a Wonderful Life is my number four favorite Capra movie. Number three, It Happened One Night. I know that's a lot of people's number one, but for me, it falls right smack dab in the middle because of two personal reasons with one and two. Number two, I had the chance to be in a play, a stage production of Arsenic and Old Lace. Love the story, love the idea, love the time it took place. And Cary Grant was just so good on screen. I love the whole, the crazy ants. To me, Arsenic and Old Lace is number two. But my number one, and it's the same actor here, but it's my number one favorite movie because I just involved in politics and the machinations of D.C. and Washington and how when you go watch a movie like this that you realize as much as you think things have changed, they're still pretty much the same. The same corruption, the same Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Yeah. Why am I not surprised that that's your number one? I know you well enough.
I bet I could have said to you, before I give you, which do you think is my number one? I bet you would have been able to guess it.
Yes, that's true. And you'll just have to wait, like everyone else, till the final episode of this season to find out where that fits on my list. I will tell you it's on my list, but you'll have to wait and see where it fits. You'll have to come back then. All right.
Tune in next time.
No, tune in let's see, we're at 51. So tune in another 70. 70 episodes, 70, 71 episodes, you know, episode 132, and you'll be able to hear that. There you go. Just awesome. Hang in there. Hang in there. We'll get there.
That's an extended tease.
Hey, why not?
Awesome.
That's the way it works with these movies. Movies by minute. That's the way it is. All right.
Only so one at a time.
That's right. So, Alan, would you like to tell people where they can find Alan Sanders?
Yeah. For those of you, ironically, we just mentioned the politics. I do have a political daily talk show. I'm affiliated with one of the largest stations in the Atlanta metro area here in the United States. And so I do a daily show called The Alan Sanders Show. It is political talk. It is news talk. Every now and then, though, I got great conversations. I'll do side interviews and sometimes even off the beaten path kind of episodes as bonuses. So it's worth checking out. Also did a Movies by Minute with my buddy Walt a couple of years ago called The Wilder Ride. Those episodes are still out there where we did a couple of Gene Wilder movies. And we can talk more about that later in the week. But just Google The Alan Sanders Show. You'll find me.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, which is for some reason called X now. I don't know. And you can also find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, Hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.